Live coverage from 720 WGN. Let's go to Chicago Police Headquarters, where the police superintendent, Johnson, is leading a news conference now on the Jussie Smollett arrest. Let's go to police headquarters.
This much attention, because that's who really deserves the amount of attention that we're giving to this particular incident. So this morning, I come to you not only as the superintendent of the Chicago Police Department, but also as a black man who spent his entire life living in the city of Chicago. I know the racial divide that exists here. I know how hard it's been for our city and our nation to come together. And I also know the disparities, and I know the history. This announcement today recognizes that Empire actor Jussie Smollett took advantage of the pain and anger of racism to promote his career. I'm left hanging my head and asking why. Why would anyone, especially an African-American man, use the symbolism of a noose to make false accusations? How could someone look at the hatred and suffering associated with that symbol and see an opportunity to manipulate that symbol to further his own public profile? How can an individual who's been embraced by the city of Chicago turn around and slap everyone in this city in the face by making these false claims? Bogus police reports cause real harm. They do harm to every legitimate victim who's in need of support by police and investigators, as well as the citizens of this city. Chicago hosts one of the largest pride parades in the world, and we're proud of that as a police department and also as a city. We do not, nor will we ever tolerate hate in our city, whether that hate is based on an individual's sexual orientation, race, or anything else. So I'm offended by what's happened, and I'm also angry. I love the city of Chicago and the Chicago Police Department, warts and all. But this publicity stunt was a scar that Chicago didn't earn and certainly didn't deserve. To make things worse, the accusations within this phony attack received national attention for weeks. Celebrities, news commentators, and even presidential candidates weighed in on something that was choreographed by an actor. First, Smollett attempted to gain attention by sending a false letter that relied on racial, homophobic, and political language. When that didn't work, Smollett paid $3,500 to stage this attack and drag Chicago's reputation through the mud in the process. And why? This stunt was orchestrated by Smollett because he was dissatisfied with his salary. So he concocted a story about being attacked. Now, our city has problems. We know that. We have problems that have affected people from all walks of life, and we know that. But to put the national spotlight on Chicago for something that is both egregious and untrue is simply shameful. I'm also concerned about what this means moving forward for hate crimes. Now, of course, the Chicago Police Department will continue to investigate all reports of these types of incidents with the same amount of vigor that we did with this one. But my concern is that hate crimes will now publicly be met with a level of skepticism that previously didn't happen. That said, Smollett was treated as a victim throughout this investigation until we received evidence that led detectives in another direction. I couldn't be more proud of the unrelenting detective work that went into this investigation, and I couldn't be more proud of every investigator that played a part in it. The detective work that we saw in this case is indicative of the work that our detectives do every day in this city. This case in particular involved hours of video evidence, which when combined with old-fashioned police work, uncovered the truth. These detectives deserve all the credit in the world for carefully analyzing the leads and the evidence for weeks before coming to their conclusion. I'd also like to thank the FBI for their help in this investigation. The FBI's partnership with CPD has been pivotal in this particular case. I only hope that the truth about what happened receives the same amount of attention that the hoax did. I'll continue to pray for this troubled young man who resorted to both drastic and illegal tactics to gain attention. I'll also continue to pray for our city, asking that we can move forward from this and begin to heal. And now I'd like to call up Commander Edward Wodnicki, who personally led this patient and deliberate investigation, to walk everyone through how the Chicago Police Department arrived at this point.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Edward Wodnicki. I'm the commander of the Area Central Detective Division. I'm here to answer questions.
Timeline.
Okay. The boss just corrected me. Please forgive me. I'm supposed to go through the timeline of our investigation.
It's okay.
So here's where we are. As you all know, on the early morning of February 29th at 2 o'clock in the morning, Jesse Smollett reported that he was the victim of a hate crime. Detectives responded to the incident and interviewed him eventually at Northwestern Hospital, where he reported to us that the two offenders yelled racial and homophobic and political statements at him and beat him, put a noose around his neck, and threw bleach on him, and then fled from the area. We learned at the time that Jesse was not hurt other than scratches on his face, maybe some bruising, but no broken ribs or serious injuries. So we started a full-scale investigation into this hate crime, a very serious crime anywhere. We quickly found two persons of interest on video that we believed were the likely offenders in this case. We initially put out a seeking to identify, and we got this out in a community alert. We then started searching the area for video cameras and witnesses that could help us with our investigation. During that time frame, we interviewed over 100 individuals in a canvas of the area and a follow-up canvas as our investigation expanded. We located approximately 35 of our Chicago Police pod cameras in the area and in the areas that we determined these two persons of interest fled. We additionally found over 20 private sector cameras, and I got to say that was super useful in this investigation. The city came together to investigate and help the police with this crime. It was because of these pod cameras, our investment into technology in the city of Chicago, and the great assistance from the community in giving us those other cameras that led us to a really solid timeline of where our two persons of interest went. So, in short, we were able to track them initially forward. So after the crime, we were able to see that they fled in a particular direction and eventually got into a cab. Our investigators located that cab, interviewed the cab driver, got some video out of that cab, followed that cab using all of these surveillance cameras that are located throughout the city, the pod cameras, to an area up on the north side where they abruptly stopped the cab, got out, and walked on foot. Again, the community came together to provide us with security footage from their private cameras. So at that point, we then started tracking these two persons of interest backwards to where they came from. So we followed them walking around and eventually back to where they had gotten out of a cab. So that was another individual that we had to interview and another individual where we sought video. We continued to track that cab back to the point where the cab was tracked down by our two persons of interest in a rideshare car. We then followed up on the rideshare, and that was the lead that we needed in order to identify the two persons of interest. At that point, we had a real good timeline of where these two people went. We were able to put a name to both of these individuals, and it was at that time that we started looking at where they went right after this event. We tracked them to going to O'Hare Airport and jumping on a flight to Nigeria. Our investigation led us to determine that they had purchased a round-trip ticket with them returning to Chicago on the 13th, so approximately 2 weeks after the incident. So that gave us a couple of weeks to try to continue to follow up on any investigative lead that would help us try to determine what happened in this incident. So while we were waiting for them to return, we executed over 50 search warrants and subpoenas, working with our partners in the state's attorney's office, phone records, social media records, and records on individuals to help us illuminate the likely facts that occurred in this event. So moving forward to the 13th, we had a team in place working with the FBI, Customs, and our partners out at the airport. Airport police helped us tremendously. And we were able to locate and identify these two individuals, these two persons of interest, when they entered back into the country at Customs. We took them into custody. We read them their rights, and they both initially asked for an attorney. They were brought to Area Central Detective Headquarters so that we could process them, and it was at that time that their attorney showed up. I think you've all seen her on the news the last couple of days. She came to us, and after speaking with these two people of interest, she said that something smelled fishy. She did not think that they were the offenders as were reported. She worked with us very, very closely to get to the point where she came to me and said, "You really need to talk to these guys. I'm going to allow them to give you a video interview with us present, and we're going to have you hear their story. They are not offenders. They're victims." It was at that time that this investigation started to spin in a completely new direction. You've heard some of the statements that their lawyer, Ms. Schmidt, has made, and it was at that time that we took the information that these two individuals provided to us, and we substantiated the timeline and the details that they gave to us in this interview. We were able to substantiate those things. We worked very, very closely with the state's attorney's office. We had been working very, very closely with the state's attorney's office for over a week at that point, and it was then on the 15th, Friday the 15th, after approximately 47 hours of them being in custody and hours of them meeting with us and telling us their story and documenting their story, did we release them without charging, and I classified them no longer as suspects or persons of interest and as witnesses. So as is typical with any investigation, one would typically lock these witnesses into a grand jury statement. Monday was a holiday, the 18th. Tuesday was the first day that we could attempt to do that. So we scheduled a appointment with the grand jury, working again very closely with the state's attorney's office in this. And as you know, at the last minute, Jesse's lawyers called and said that they had evidence to postpone the grand jury that they wanted to provide to us. It was at that time that they called us, and I met with them, with a team of our detectives, and essentially they gave us no new information. So I reported that back to the state's attorney's office, and it was at that time that we locked in both of these witnesses to the grand jury. I'm told they did an excellent job. And then the state's attorney's office approved charges against Jesse for the class 4 disorderly conduct false police report. We met with Jesse's attorneys, and we arranged for him to turn himself in. And as you all know, he turned himself in at 5 o'clock this morning in the first district in Chicago. Today at 1:30, Jesse will be going in front of a bond court judge, and the bond court hearing will be conducted at 26 in California.
Okay. Yeah, say again? Well, it was uneventful. He showed up, of course, with his attorneys and a few other individuals, but it went smoothly. Because that's typically what we do. Once we believe that witnesses are valuable witnesses and credible, then we take them to the grand jury to lock their testimonies in.
Superintendent, you made two statements here that I think are most important.
You can't hear the questions, yes, from reporters, but Superintendent Eddie Johnson of the Chicago Police now taking questions.
Well, a number of individuals. You know, we serve subpoenas and warrants, of course, on Mr. Smollett, his manager for phone records, the two people of interest that we had. And so we still have quite a few search warrants and subpoenas out there that we're waiting to come back.
You talked about the
We didn't pull resources from any shootings or homicide investigations. The detectives that you see behind me basically work on different teams, which include property crimes and things of that nature. We don't have the exact numbers yet, but let me just tell you all this. Anytime a hate crime is reported in the city of Chicago, it gets the same attention. This didn't get any special attention. You all gave this more attention specifically than we do. We give every hate crime in this city the same amount of vigor, because there's no place for hatred in this city. And as I said in the very beginning, you know, I've lived in the city of Chicago my entire life. We just don't have any room for hatred in this city. And for somebody to use it for personal gain, it's shameful. Because what that does is take away the resources that we could be putting into other crimes. Say again?
Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson taking questions following the arrest of Jesse Smollett.
That's the FBI's investigation, so CPD doesn't comment on the FBI's investigation.
Jesse Smollett turned himself in to Chicago Police at about 6 a.m. Eastern Time after he was charged with disorderly conduct for filing a false report. Superintendent Eddie Johnson of Chicago Police is taking questions from assembled reporters at Chicago Police Headquarters. I'm Aaron Katursky, and you're listening to live coverage from ABC News.
Check that he used to pay them. So the $3,500 was for the two of them in total, and then $500 upon return. No, it took place right there. So, of course, it was staged. The brothers had on gloves during the staged attack where they punched him a little bit. But as far as we can tell, the scratches and bruising that you saw on his face was most likely self-inflicted.
Chicago Police Superintendent Eddie Johnson from Chicago mincing no words about Empire actor Jussie Smollett. He said the actor orchestrated a publicity stunt because he was unhappy with his salary. Johnson said he was offended and angry that Smollett took advantage of the pain and anger of racism to try and advance his career. I'm Aaron Katursky. You're listening to live coverage from ABC News.
Resources. What I want you all to really understand is when you all put things out there into the universe that's not actual facts, then it causes us to have to chase all that stuff down. Those are resources and time spent that we'll never get back, that we could utilize for another investigation. And let me be clear about something. The shootings and homicides in this city were not impacted at all by this particular investigation. And again, we give the same amount of resources to every hate crime that's reported in this city.
Was the attack purposely done out of camera?
I think that they knew where that one camera was, but unfortunately it didn't capture the event. So I believe that Mr. Smollett wanted it on camera, but unfortunately that particular camera wasn't pointing in that direction.
You said that search warrants were at-
No, not at this time. Yes. He was on the phone, but whether or not he knew it was a ruse, we can't speak to right now.
Interviewing him?
At some point, we'll talk to him. It was upsetting, you know, and I want you all to realize this. So we've been working on this investigation for about 3 weeks. We've solved several shootings and homicides in that period of time. So we don't take away resources from violent crimes of that nature just because this person is a celebrity. Again, you all gave this a lot more attention than it probably deserves. So when you get the opportunity, the shooting victims and families in this city that are victims of those crimes, give them the same amount of attention. This shouldn't have garnered the attention that it did, but it did because of his celebrity status. So Mr. Smollett is the one that orchestrated this crime. They became cooperating witnesses in the 47th hour of their 48-hour hold time. So now they are witnesses to what he did. So he has to be accountable for what he did. He orchestrated this.
Just being accountable.
Well, I think that's a subject for another day, but of course, it's because of what he did that we had to invest all these resources. He hasn't made any statements at this time. No. No. Kim Fox and I, you know, look, I'm the police superintendent. She's Cook County State's attorney. So we talk almost every day about different cases. So the fact that she recused herself didn't impact the case at all. Say again? Listen, we have a great relationship with our federal partners, and we certainly need to have a good relationship with our state's attorney's office, which we did. So again, you all have to remember that the erroneous rumors and innuendo that was put out there in the beginning was just that. This investigation didn't turn in the direction of Mr. Smollett being a defendant until the 47th hour that we had those two individuals in custody. So one more hour, we would have had to let them go. We may not be here today. So the state's attorney didn't drag anything. We needed to put the case together. These things take time. This isn't TV. Okay, this is real life. So it takes time. Well, who's to say the leaks came from us? Just because there are leaks out there doesn't necessarily mean it came from CPD. You know, I heard particular things that were out there that I knew was simply untrue. So it doesn't mean it came from the police department. We have the phone records that clearly indicate that they talked to each other quite a bit before the incident, after the incident, and while they were out of the country. Yes. Yes. You mean right after, like moments afterwards? Yeah, I just said. So we know that they talked at least an hour or so before the attack, an hour or so after the attack, and then while they were out of the country. We know that they were talking. I don't know if they were his first choice, but that's who ultimately did it. But we don't have any evidence to suggest that. That the brothers might be victim.
Yeah, but is there...
Boss, I think that I think the fact that this was staged and that Jesse hired these two guys to stage this for his benefit and then spin this into a criminal investigation put them in a really tough spot as well, to the point where now they were arrested for a hate crime, and only because of just the incredible work by the entire team did we get to the point where we're able to get the truth from them, and now we are where we are today.
Commander, why did Smollett hire those?
So one of the brothers worked on Empire, so they had a relationship, an association. So he probably knew that he needed somebody with some bulk, and he knew them. They had a previous relationship, so that's probably the only reason he chose them.
Sir, did you see Jesse's interview on The Morning America? Yes. Did you see the interview on it?
I didn't see the entire thing. I saw a couple of parts of it. And to be quite honest, it's shameful, you know, because it painted this city that we all love and work hard in a negative connotation, you know, to insinuate and to stage a hate crime of that nature when he knew as a celebrity it would get a lot of attention. It's just despicable. You know, it makes you wonder what's going through someone's mind to do something like that. So, yeah, I saw a couple of parts of it, and I was angered by it, to be quite honest.
Superintendent, you mentioned that there were two cats.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That certainly helped, and you know, their counter information on that really pinpointed who they were. But who's to say whether or not we would have or not? You know, let me tell you this: these individuals you see standing behind me, the detectives in Chicago, in my opinion, are probably some of the best detectives in this country. So I have no doubt that they would have gotten to the bottom of this. You know, is that okay? Yeah, that's last call before closing. Well, to be perfectly honest, from the very beginning, we had some questions about it. But as I said, we gave Mr. Smollett the benefit of the doubt all the way up until that 47th hour of the 48 hours we could hold those two individuals, because we just didn't have the total package to support that it was a hoax. So when you heard me coming out saying we are treating him like a victim, that was the truth, because at that time, that's what he was. And I think anybody that reports a crime deserves the Chicago Police Department to treat them in that fashion until we have solid evidence to prove otherwise. The way in the back. Well, you know what? They did it because of the financial aspect of it. Now, whether or not they knew the whole thing would go the way that it did, and I can tell you all with 100% certainty, the way that they carried this out, there was never a thought in their mind that we would be able to track them down, because these detectives, they put in intense work and just great work. And I cannot say how incredibly proud I am of them for the work that they put into it. But that's just an example of the work that they do every day that just goes unreported because it doesn't get the media attention that this particular case got. But it was financial gain. Last question. Well, he identified who those two individuals were. You know, we knew that then, but he didn't know that we knew. But, yeah, he helped us out when he identified them. Okay?
When did you identify the brothers?
That was after the ride share account, yes.
What day was that?
Remember what day that was?
Probably about a week later.
Okay. No, that was the one piece. We have about, I would say, about 2 hours of footage back and forth, and that those few minutes were not on foot. Again? We don't know. Yeah. Okay. Thank you all. Say again? Well, that's at the 47th hour is when the two brothers decided, like the commander reiterated, that with the help of their lawyer, they decided to confess to the entirety of what the plot was. Okay? Say that again. Absolute justice would be an apology to this city that he smeared, admitting what he did, and then be man enough to offer what he should offer up in terms of all the resources that were put into this. Thank you all.